What's up, everybody, and welcome to Life Lean In. This is episode 27.
Yeah, but I need you to be quiet because today we're going to do something a little different. I tell Dan so often, I wish that everyone could see the side of you that I get to see at home. And I know that as a pastor, sometimes it's hard to show that real and raw. And so today, I get to facilitate an episode called Confessions of a Pastor. So Dan is just going to bless us with his honesty and his transparency. And we're going to talk about some of the things that feel hard and that feel pressing and maybe things that people you don't think people know about you.
And the goal of the podcast is for people to grow.
Right.
And you know, we want people to realize that they're not perfect.
Yep.
That we're all in process. And so I have a commitment. I not only want to grow myself and be challenged, but I want to help others to do that too.
Right.
And so it takes honesty and to own, man, what you deal with and what you struggle with. And here's what I'm going through. And here's what my job looks like and my role looks like. And so we decided we'd be real and raw today and just open up and have a conversation of Confessions of a Pastor.
So we have, I think, 10 different points that we want to share with you today that Dan and I have talked about ahead of time that are personal struggles for him and that I've seen firsthand. And so my first question is, what would you say is your greatest struggle?
Insecurity.
Yeah.
I think I've shared this before in small groups. I've shared this before, maybe even from our platform, from this, you know, from our preaching stage, that the number one thing I struggle with is insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I often tell people, like, it might look like I'm confident. It might look like I have it all together. But man, I compare myself to others, which is a danger. I look at other people's success and measure myself, which is a danger. And man, if people don't like me, I believe it or not, we always talk about you being the people pleaser, but man, I have insecurity when people don't like me or
you
the things
want
I
to
say,
be likeable,
or
right?
The things we're doing,
mm-hmm.
It affects me. I have insecurity. And honestly, one of the number one things that I've shared with people often is feeling like what I'm doing isn't making a difference.
Yeah. You shared about how if you step off the stage on a Sunday, your first feeling is what?
Yeah. Most Sundays I get done preaching and feel like that was terrible or did that even matter? Will it even make a difference in someone's life? Will it help transform their life? Was God in it?
Yeah.
Did he show up and do something incredible beyond what I'm capable of even doing myself? And so, there's a constant questioning of how well I've done.
Yeah.
And is it making a difference?
Right. And I think I remember, you know, a while ago, you were very specifically told by someone, you are so unapproachable.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was actually pretty crushing to you because you don't want to come across that way,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I think what people maybe don't see is that a lot of times that is a mask for your insecurity.
Yeah. And there's a couple of different dynamics to that. I think, you know, one of my mentors, one of our overseers, actually, and a man that I would call my pastor, Pastor Mac Richard in Austin, Texas, you know, he used to use the word, I'm trying to come up with it, abrasive.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an abrasive personality. I'm a type A person. On
get it
any
done.
Personality test ever.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a commander. I'm a let's go, driven. And honestly, we talk about this a lot in our culture. A lot of people lean towards the task side or the people side.
Yeah.
And I honestly love people. I wouldn't do what I do if I wasn't first called by God to do it. And if I didn't love people. And if I didn't want to help people. And honestly, that flows out of how much God has helped me.
Right.
That love for people and wanting to help people has flowed out of how much God has done in my own life.
Right.
But my personality is when I walk in a room, I'm seeing tasks that need to be done. I'm seeing hey, those rows, they're not straight, or right. Hey, that video needs to be fixed. The sound level needs to be tweaked. And so I can see all these things that God's put in me. He's wired me that way. But I can, especially on a Sunday morning, I can miss the point, which right. is the people yeah. that God's called me to serve. And so I have to take a step back, and I'm sharing this honestly with you. I have to take a step back and say, like, okay, I do have a role to play here, and there is some excellence that we need mm-hmm. to strive for. But if I'm walking by people that God has called me to help and to support and to encourage and to lift up and pray for, because I'm going to fix a task,
right?
Then I'm missing the point.
Well, and, you know, we talked about recently, one thing that Jesus was always distractible, was able to be distracted by, was people. No matter when, if he was on his way to complete a task and if someone stopped him, yeah. he would give them his time. But I think going back to point number one, being he's less secure than he appears, is, I think, right, with people. Mm-hmm. And that's where that comes in. So now we're going to get to the second point, because like I said, we have, I think, 10 for you guys today. Do you feel like your relationship with God, because of your position, comes easier than it does to other people?
No. I think a lot of people think that being a church leader or being a pastor, that you all of a sudden have like a better access to God.
Right.
Or he hears you more clearly. Or maybe you hear him more clearly.
Right.
And honestly, you know, I remember thinking years ago, man, if I could just get married, then I'll be able to have more security. Or if I just, you know, have right. these kids, I'll have this. And I think sometimes we even do that with our relationship with God. We think, man, if my schedule was just a little bit right. less crazy, or man, if my kids didn't wake up at this mm-hmm. time, I could actually have time with God.
Or if I step into ministry, my relationship with him will be easier.
Will grow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I think a huge part of that is relationships, period, take work.
Yeah. And time.
And time. And yeah. so, like, if our relationship's going to be great, it takes time.
Right.
And it's, we got to pour into each other. And that's the same thing with our relationship with God. Like, we're supposed to put him first.
Yeah.
And so that's a challenge for me. Like, I shared with a group of pastors last week, like, you're not a morning person.
I am not.
I'm a morning person.
I'm also not a nighttime person or a late afternoon person.
But you thrive sleep. When you are awake, when you are awake. Yes. So you love you a good nap.
Yeah. So I'm not a morning person. Yeah. Sorry, I distracted
so,
you.
Anyway, so I'm typically the one that's up with the kids early in right. the morning, most of the time, not all the time. But oftentimes, like, I've made a commitment that the first thing I'm going to do in my day mm-hmm. is I'm going to get in God's word. I want God's word to set the stage for my right. day. That his ways are higher than my ways, is better than our ways. And so, man, I want to get with God before anything else happens.
Right.
And so the challenge is, you know, the kids come out and they
yeah,
start
we got a 2.5
playing
and a 5-year-old.
Their movies and, you know, or they start playing their videos or
their guitars
playing, or maybe they're singing or dancing or want food and the dog's up, whatever. And, yeah, and man, I have to
distracted.
Fight. Yeah. I have mm-hmm. to fight for, man, that quality time with God
right.
in his word, in prayer. This morning, actually, this doesn't happen often. So I want to be real about that, but I woke up this morning at 5 a.m. and I just had a bunch of people on my brain, and I laid there and I said, okay, God, like, I'm going to get up and I'm going to start praying
for these
people mm-hmm. because obviously you put them on my heart and mind. And to be honest, like, there's a lot of times when that happens and I think, man, I gotta fix this issue, or I gotta go mm-hmm. have this conversation.
We don't
and
think to pray
man,
first.
Yeah, like I gotta. This person's hurting, or they're going through this issue, and man, I gotta figure out how to help them through it, or I gotta figure out who to connect them with to get
right.
the right answers. And man, this morning, it was one of the most beautiful things that's ever happened mm-hmm. In me personally. Is I woke up and said, "Okay, God, I'm gonna. You already know,
right? So I'm gonna
what's
pray.
Going on." And so I'm gonna purposefully pray for them because you
right.
brought them to my heart. And yeah. I just sent them a text and said, hey, I'm praying for you. I'm thinking about you. And I did say, how can I help?
Right.
Or how can we help?
But you prayed first.
But I prayed first.
And I think, you know, I think sometimes we often think that pastors or people in ministry aren't as attacked or prone to attacks from Satan. And the Bible tells us our battle isn't against flesh and blood. And you better believe that as soon as you step into ministry, we always say you have a target on your back because Satan's afraid of the impact you're going to make.
Yeah.
So I would argue that even more so you have to fight because you have someone really fighting against you to not do the work you're doing.
Yeah.
And so I sometimes remind myself, like, if I don't feel like Satan is going at me, then am I doing what I'm called to do? Because I want to scare him.
Yeah.
You know, I always say I want to be the kind of person that when my feet hit the floor in the morning, the devil says, crap, she's up.
She's awake.
You know, and it may be later than most people, which is fine. But so second point is that getting close to God isn't easy for you either.
Can I just say a side note to that? I saw something that's very powerful. I think it's Louis Giglio on his Instagram yesterday said that God never sleeps.
Yeah.
So one of the differences between us and God is we need sleep.
Right.
And he doesn't sleep. And so when we go through issues, man, sleep can be one of the greatest things. And sometimes our problems don't need both of us awake.
Yeah.
How powerful is
that? That's cool. Yeah.
Because he's got this.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a great reminder. Yeah. So point three, I think people often look at you and maybe at me thinking, wow, they're surrounded by people all the time. They must never feel lonely.
Yeah.
And what would you say about that?
I would say that being around a crowd does not make you feel known or loved.
Right. So point three is that you're less lonelier than you, or yeah, you're more confession. You're lonelier than you let on.
Than I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or than people think. Yeah. People think that pastors have a lot of friends. Leaders have a lot of friends. And that's why I enjoy getting together and talking with other leaders, not even just people that do what we do in pastoring, but other leaders in other segments of society, whether it's business leaders or coaches or whatever, because there's a loneliness to leadership. And here's what I mean. People aren't even always going to agree with decisions that you make.
Right.
And so, you know, this, I mean, the most attacked leader probably in the world is the president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
Because probably 50% because he's making don't decisions. Yeah.
He's making decisions that, you know, half the population might not agree with. And it's true in any part of leadership. I mean, that's a part of it. And so navigating this year, I mean, I can just tell you, like, I had decisions to make as the leader of our church. You know, when to shut down, when to reopen, when to
open,
what are going to be the standards we set.
Right.
And all of this was amidst changing circumstances, like changing directives and different government guidelines. And
here's the science and, you
know, yeah. And our, like, how, you know, what are we going to do with childcare and whatnot? And, I know masks are a huge issue. Are they needed? Are they not needed? And, vaccinations, like, everything is so polarized and divisive that when we make decisions as leaders to best lead our church and to lead people, we know that not everyone is going to agree with the decision.
Right.
And honestly, I think one of the hardest things to do in this past year has been to be able to, I mean, we global pandemic, opening, shutting, social distancing, vaccinations, trying to love people well, trying to encourage them, keep their spiritual lives on fire while also being distanced, getting out into the community, because the church doesn't just shut down.
Right.
Like, when the church, if we shut down and we think that all we do is a service, then we're not a church.
We're not a church.
Like, when we shut down, we actually mobilized more than we ever have before.
That's true.
We went out to serve people and care for people. We did all these events for outreach.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's navigating a different circumstance.
Right.
But I think, you know, even in that, it's like, well, aren't you exposing your people to sickness? And man, I even look at history, and I've shared this with our church, the greatest growth in Christian history. And this is what's so hard, I think, as a pastor, the greatest growth in Christian history is when the Black Plague was happening in Europe and millions of people were fleeing the cities to get away from people. It's the exact same thing we saw this year with the pandemic. Right. People were fleeing cities. They're going out in the countryside. They're social distancing. They're getting away from each other. And while all that was happening, Christians who weren't afraid of dying, because that's the greatest right. lesson we have as Christ followers, is we don't have to fear death because we overcome death because of God,
right?
Because of Jesus. And so we had Christians going into the cities while everyone was fleeing it to go and care for the sick and the hurting and the dying.
Right.
They were willing to sacrifice themselves for the good of these people.
But that can feel lonely.
And that can feel lonely. Mm-hmm. And you could think, well, you don't care about people. And so I get that dynamic.
Yeah.
And so honestly, a lot of the loneliness is over a track record of time. Here's how I like to put it. A pastor friend of mine said once, our job is to create a culture in our church where we continually not give up on people.
Right.
That everyone can come and have a second chance. That they can have a restart.
Right.
You know, that they can find new life. That's what our church is called, new life.
Right.
And so we're constantly creating this culture where I don't care what you did last night. You can find a home here. You can belong here. You can take the mask off and say, this is the real me. But while doing that, mm-hmm. people still leave you.
People still give up on us.
Yep. So there's times where you're creating this culture of, man, I don't want to ever give up on anybody. And we want to believe the best and we want to help people and not give up on people. But yet people walk away from us.
You're battling the hurt or the loneliness.
People walk away from us. They'll leave the church and they'll either not like us or not like me. Like they see the abrasive Dan and they don't know the fullness of Dan or whatever. Right. And I'm not always the reason, but sometimes, you know, a good chunk of the time.
Yeah.
And so people, when they leave the church or leave us or for whatever reason, it hurts.
Yeah.
And that dynamic then begins to say, like, okay, who can I trust?
Right. So, yeah. So you're lonelier than you let on.
Yeah.
Yep. And which I think is so important for people to know that they're.
And I would even say to you and for her, you to be a little vulnerable, like you feel that too.
Oh, yeah.
Like you often will say that, like, how can we actually have real friends without the how can we like. Let off our guard and let down our guard and maybe take off our own masks and not feel like people are going to judge us or leave
us. Or like it's going to come back around to bite you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, definitely lonely.
Yeah.
What would you say about if people think, well, your Instagram looks like your home life is amazing. You have these these two great girls, a white fluffy dog that looks so calm in the pictures. And
craps
you know,
and peas everywhere.
And
choose your brand new sandals.
Yeah, I went back.
Digs all over our yard.
So at your fourth confession is what?
It's hard at home.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think often with a pastor, I think people put pastors on a pedestal and they just think they have it all together. Like I'm on a journey of faith, just like everybody else. God is working on transforming me.
Right.
Just like everyone else. I'm hopefully letting him make me into a better version of Dan.
Right. And what do you feel like is your hardest job that you do?
Parenting.
Yeah.
Like,
we don't have it figured out.
I had the funniest conversation at the gym one time. This is like 2 years ago about how like you have to get a license to drive a car.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a license to do this. You have to have like training to do all these jobs. You have to have a license to get married. Like you're supposed to go through counseling, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You can take home a baby
without having a license.
Without zero training. And like no manual for that. And parenting is the hardest, I think, you know, because you're raising these kids and there is no manual and you're figuring it out. And every kid is different.
So true.
Every kid has its own personality.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I heard someone say once and this stuck out to me is don't compare your behind the scenes to my highlight reel.
Right.
And no matter how real we try to be on social media, you're still seeing the highlight reel.
My favorite Instagram that I think I ever did was when our daughter Gracie who we call May May, she we were eating spaghetti and she was like putting it on top of her head and she was like playing with it.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's, you know, some moms and dads are like, no, 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 keep it on the table, blah, blah, blah. And
we're
honestly,
just laughing.
But
yeah.
That honestly, that's us. Like, we have that clean, keep it together mindset. Like, I often joke with Kelsey that she'll pick up toys before she
before
the kids are
done
even
playing.
Done playing with them. I'm like, let them play, create the mess, and then come back. But I remember she was actually playing with the spaghetti and she was taking it out of the garbage can
and
put it on her head. Mm-hmm. And then she started another time, she was drinking someone's Starbucks
out of the
garbage.
It was our babysitter's Starbucks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she was like 1 year old. And it was the cutest thing ever.
That's why she loves coffee.
But man, it's hard. And we're not even we haven't even hit the teenage years yet. And so we know that there's things to come.
Yeah.
But here's the deal. Keep letting God be the center.
Right.
We have a vision for our family. It's very clear. We want to help our kids to love God. Love the church, which is the bride of Christ. It's the community of believers that are going to help prop our kids up to succeed in life in the best way possible. And then our hope at the end is that they love us.
Right.
And we're creating a culture that we're not like mandating church attendance. Like, we want them to love it for themselves.
Right.
And so we create a culture around loving God in our house, praying together and encouraging worship. Man, our kids worship probably more than we do at home.
Even though it just sometimes sounds like they're yelling at us. And the car, Gracie's going, this is a move. And I was like, why is she yelling that? Oh, she's singing a worship
song.
She's
wanting to sing a worship song.
But yeah, so life at home is not easy for us. It's hard too. So we're going to go to point five.
Yeah.
I think this is a big one that a lot of people would like to know. Does criticism hurt you or does it just bounce off of you?
Yeah. Yes, the answer is yes. Criticism hurts a lot. And a lot, honestly, a lot more than I really, I think I even knew myself. Kelsey and I have seen a counselor as a pastor that actually counsels lead pastors. We've been seeing him for about 2 years now. Shout out Chip Judd. He's amazing.
Amazing.
And we've always talked about how Kelsey has, and she does, she has more of the people pleaser.
But I'm also really sensitive.
Yeah, she has more of the people pleaser gene in her, and she's sensitive. And, you know, she has the more of like, I want to do whatever it takes to make you happy.
Yeah.
I don't have as much of that. I'm not just going to do whatever you want to make you happy. But your criticism does make me think twice about that.
And what I think something that we really unlocked in counseling is, you know, a lot of times when you receive criticism, and I feel like this was more a past thing where I can say to you all, I'm so thankful for you and your willingness to grow and to change and to let God move in you, because I think that's probably been the biggest blessing of serving alongside of you, is to see that you don't just say, like, I have it all figured out. And you can easily say, I want to get better at this, and I want to get better for myself, for my family, and for the church. And I feel like even in this past year, I have seen your growth just, like, become exponential. And so in a way, I'm thankful for 2020 and all the crap that it brought us, because I've seen you grow so much, and then in turn, it's growing me, and it's growing the people of our church. But what Chip unlocked in you is basically going back to point one, that when you get criticized, your go-to reaction was defensiveness.
It feeds my insecurity.
And it feeds your insecurity.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a couple of years ago, I'll just be very, very honest. I was using other people's messages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I was, again, that comparison thing where you're like, man, I don't know how to do this, you know.
Yeah.
I'm learning so much. We planted a church from scratch and we're trying to learn how do we do this? And
right.
And there's so many things, so many facets to it, which we'll talk about in a minute. But I think, you know, I got into a mode where I was using other people's messages And honestly, it's God's word. Like,
right. You said
it's God's word spoken.
Yeah.
But I think one of the challenges in life, and this is what God taught me out of it, was I was criticized for using other people's messages. Valid criticism.
Yeah.
I got defensive in like, well, but you don't know all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But what I realized now looking back is I really hadn't found my own voice.
Yeah.
And I have been surrounded by incredible leaders,
mm-hmm,
with a lot of influence, pastors who have knocked it out of the park, who have huge churches.
When people can get a 30-second clip of Stephen Furtick at their fingertips, yeah, every Sunday, it's hard.
Some
not
of the
to
greatest communicators,
right,
in the world. And so
you think, why does my voice matter?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But not even that, but the fact that like part of my voice is the people who have spoken into my life,
right,
in the past.
Right.
And so, man, I remember like even trying to find like the core values of our church and like, you know, who are we going to be?
Right.
And, you know, thinking like, man, most of the cultures that we're creating are being created by what God has done,
right,
in our lives up to this point. And so, man, I had these great leaders who poured all these great things, mm-hmm, into me and values and so many great teachings. But I had to find my own.
Right.
And sure, so some of that might have been, man, that was fantastic. And I feel like that's a part of who we are.
Yeah.
But man, through that criticism of, man, is it appropriate to use other people's messages? Man, the way Rick Warren says it, and I don't know if it's PC at this time, but Rick Warren says, if my bullet fits your gun, shoot it.
And you, like you said, it's all the same.
And so
message.
And Solomon even says, like, there's nothing new under the sun.
Right.
It's God. If it's centered on God's word and it's the Bible, man, it's his message. It's
right.
Not mine. I'm not building Dan Smith's platform. I'm not
right.
building Stephen Furtick's platform. Like, we're building Jesus's
right.
platform.
But I think one of the coolest things I've heard you say about criticism and the way you've grown is you always say there's a nugget of truth in every ounce of criticism.
And
so
what
I
can
think,
you take from it?
Right. What can you take from it? And so I think your takeaway has made all of us better.
Yeah.
Of like, yep, it's the same message and it's going to be with my voice.
And the defensive. So the criticism that came about using other people's messages, that spurred so much insecurity in me,
mm-hmm,
defensiveness. You don't understand what I do. You don't understand all the pressures.
Right.
You don't understand blah, 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 blah. And honestly, the growth that I feel like God's done in my life in the last year is simply finding my own voice.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I haven't been like, it doesn't mean that I'm not going to take, hey, I heard that. I'm someone who wants to be pastored themselves.
Right.
So I watch other people's messages, and not just to take their message, but
to be fed, yeah.
Like, mm-hmm, to go to church myself,
right?
And so it's when God is working through someone else's message in my own heart,
mm-hmm,
man, it's hard not to be like, oh yeah, I mean, this man, our people,
be great.
Our people need to hear this message.
Yeah.
It's doing so much in me. Why wouldn't I share that
right.
with someone else?
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. So we have, I think, four more points that we're going to get through. And this one is interesting to me because I think you share vision so freely. You're such a visionary. And so it's just, you're always thinking like 6 months ahead, which is really stressful for me because I go to logistics of like, how are we going to get this done? How is this going to affect our family? How's this? What are people going to think? But you said, I'm actually afraid to ask for what I want. So that's confession number 6. I'm afraid to ask for what I want. And why is that?
I'm afraid to ask for what I want. And I think the hardest thing about being a visionary is, one, it's the vision isn't just for me.
Right.
It's if you get a vision from God, if you get a dream that God's placed in your heart, it's not to build my thing.
Right.
It's our thing. It's his church. It's his movement. And so it's a work and a move of God. And I
right.
think so many times, like, I have the enemy and even my own voice saying, man, this is going to look selfish, or, you know,
you're asking
this,
a lot
are
of people.
Man, I remember saying, like, I didn't want to do a podcast because I thought, well, if this is like Pastor Dan Smith's thing,
yeah.
like, I don't care about
right.
my name. I really don't. Matter of fact, I think Dan Smith is one of the most boring names ever, but that's just a side note. I want my life to matter.
Right. And when you're sharing vision, it's not just your vision. Like you said, it's for everyone, but it's also asking something of everyone, and yeah. it's asking them to take that step forward. And so how do you best share it so that they can feel that and want to be on board for themselves too, and for the people that it's going to impact? But yes. it's going to take time. It's going to take talents. It's going to take their treasures. Yep.
So any leader has to cast vision.
Right.
It doesn't matter whether they're in the church, in the business world, they're a coach, whatever.
Right.
Where there is no vision, the people around perish. Them, they perish. Mm-hmm. They die because of the lack of vision, or they're just walking through life dead.
Right.
And so for in the church, that's huge. Like, we're trying to get people into the move of God, into the purpose of God. Mm-hmm. And vision costs something.
Right. Yeah.
Like, to have vision, it means that there's something out there that we could do together.
Mm-hmm. But it's going to take
something. Yep. And that cost is in the church, and probably really any industry, whether it's a business, whatever, it takes people, resources, mm-hmm. and it takes money.
Mm-hmm.
It's provision for the vision.
Right.
And so when we said that I'm afraid to ask for what I really want, is, and you know this, is I am overflowing with vision.
Mm-hmm.
And what keeps me from sharing it and even saying, here's what I want and here's what I'd like to see, is the fear that, again, going back to insecurity, that it won't be provided for.
Right.
That people won't say, yeah, let's go do that together. That right. they won't say, man,
this guy's crazy.
I want to serve in that.
Right.
Or I want to be a part of that. I want to be a part of doing this thing.
Right.
And so, man, we've talked about that a lot. Like, why would we go into a prison
right.
to do our services? And I believe it with everything I've got. I think everyone deserves a second chance.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen statistics that if people give their lives to Christ, it changes not only their life, but it changes their family.
Mm-hmm.
That like 88% plus
mm-hmm.
kids who have a parent who is incarcerated, they'll follow in that right. same footsteps.
Yeah.
And we have the opportunity to invest. We can be the first to invest in mm-hmm. Michigan to have a prison, a church campus in a prison.
Right.
What does that cost?
Yeah.
People and money.
Right. Exactly.
It'll cost like $100,000.
Yep.
So there it is. There's vision and provision. I'm afraid to ask for what I really want.
Yep.
And it's not even what I really want.
Yeah.
It's what could we do together?
Right.
To make a difference in all eternity
yeah.
for what God has called us to do.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. That's good. So we often talk about how the job of being a pastor is not just preaching. But to a lot of people, it's, well, you have the week preparing your sermon, and then you feed us, right? You feed us on Sunday morning, and I don't feel fed by you, you know, and you have that phrase a lot.
What do you do, Pastor?
Right. Like, what do you do during the week?
Other than a week on Sunday, what is it? What do you do?
Right. So this confession number 7 is, you said, my secret job is nothing like this job. So share with us kind of what the rest of the job looks like.
Nobody really knows. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So I was actually spending a group of time with some pastors last week. We talked a little about this, and it's like we went to seminary and we got a degree.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a lot of times it's like you're the guy with the stuff. You know about God, you know about the
right.
Bible, and then you just regurgitate it to other people. But Jesus didn't lead that way. Like
right.
the way Jesus led was very experientially. It's here. I'm gonna lead you to do things that actually activate your faith.
Right.
It's not just piling on this knowledge base
right.
that you have. And so secrets of the job is, I think the biggest thing is, my job is to mobilize people in their faith.
Yeah.
And so it takes a lot of leadership and a lot of planning to get that done.
Yeah.
So here's the other, here's the big thing. When you leave seminary, nobody knows. Like nobody.
Right.
Nobody was taught in seminary how to do a funeral.
Yep.
Nobody taught, here's where you stand, here's what you say. Nobody taught us how to do a wedding.
Right. How to be, there's a baby in the
window. Nobody Nobody told us
how to be the CEO of a company,
which is basically what a pastor does.
Right.
Like, we run an organization and it's filled with volunteers, which is the highest level of trying to get people to follow you and do stuff. It's the hardest leadership there is right. in a volunteer organization. Nobody taught me how to budget.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Nobody told me how to steward the resources that are given. And we talk about how we don't give money to the church. We give it through the church. To make a bigger impact together.
Right.
And so again, coming back to that vision, the last thing I would say about that is nobody taught me how to hire staff.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, nobody taught me how to lead staff.
Right.
How to lead a board meeting. Man, nobody taught me this stuff.
Yeah.
And so there's so many things
more.
Where you just don't know what you're doing.
Right.
And so you got to learn.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So do you feel like you always know what you're doing?
I think that's to the last point is no.
Yeah.
Is there's so much learning on
along.
The job is mm-hmm. that like I wasn't and thankfully there's a lot of Christian colleges, I would say, or
right.
Academies that are being built right now
yeah.
for people who are going into ministry or pastoring or whatever. That are more practical.
Yeah.
Like here's actually how
sure.
you can do this.
Yeah.
And so it is some of the theology training and Bible training.
Right.
But it's here's how you actually do this stuff.
Right.
And so we got to leave kind of that seminary Greek model of learning.
Yeah.
Get a more Hebrew, holistic, follow me and I'll show you.
Right.
Type
so
of thing.
Good.
And that's what Jesus did with his
yeah.
followers.
Jesus didn't say, sit here and I'll tell you exactly what to do.
He showed them.
He said, follow me.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. That's so good. So the last one I'm going to ask you, you ready?
Yeah.
Where do you, in your mind, when you pictured planning a church almost 6 years ago?
Four and a half.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 4.5 years
ago. I thought
we
celebrated our five-year birthday.
5 years is in September.
Oh.
COVID counted for 10 years, so it's fine.
Do you feel like we've made the progress that you thought we would?
No.
No. Why not?
I think I'm grateful for what we've done in mm-hmm. people's lives.
Yeah.
I know that there's a ton of things God has done in people's lives.
Yeah.
I know we've done a lot for our community as we're just getting started.
Right.
I know that we've given over $100,000 to help new churches just like ours be planted all over North America.
Yeah.
I know that we've done a lot of great things. But I think when you look at the church and its growth, what is said is healthy things grow.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, you know this because you see behind the scenes, our church has been plateaued for like 3 years. Man,
yeah.
we in our first year, we grew from nothing to over 200 people in our community.
Right.
And that's, of course, that's the crowd. It's not mm-hmm. necessarily the deep part of the right. growth that happens
right.
in people's lives. Which we've seen more of in the last couple of years. But I think healthy growing things or healthy things grow.
Well, mm-hmm.
And so I look back on our years and think, man, when I look at all the lists of what it takes to be a healthy church, almost every time, and we do surveys about this, we take this stuff so seriously to be a healthy growing organization,
mm-hmm.
culture. What does all that stuff look
yeah.
like? Are we helping people to grow personally? Are we giving to the community? Are we
right.
giving back? Are we building into people's life and leadership? Man, we're doing all those things.
Yeah.
We're preaching the Bible. We're preaching Jesus. We're spirit-filled.
Right.
Spirit-led. We're dynamic. Like,
yeah.
we're a dynamic church. People love coming to our,
right.
our place. And yet we've been stagnant.
Well, and I think, I think culture sets us up to go into it in almost a naive way. Of yes, of course you want to see attendance grow, but how else are you measuring growth? And so
yeah.
I think it's been really amazing also to see the growth in people's lives, you know, and that we have people coming to know Jesus every weekend,
yeah.
you know,
and I think that's what's hard. I mean, our vision is very clear,
right?
We want to see people saved, like that they actually know Jesus,
right?
They don't just know about him, but they know him. And that, so people are saved. They're pastored, which means they're becoming a better version of themselves.
Right. They're finding freedom.
The third thing is they're being discipled. They're being trained
yep.
in how Jesus wants them to live their life. It's purpose.
Right.
We call that discovering purpose. And then making a difference that we can actually mobilize a church
mm-hmm.
to go reach more people.
I was going to say, then making a difference turns around to helping others then.
To come to know God. Right. Yeah. And
it's
so,
all a circle.
And so literally we talk about all this all the time. Man, if heaven or hell are real, which they are.
Yep.
Then man, we got to get more people.
Right.
Like growth, we should not be afraid of growth numerically. If we can get more people exposed to who Jesus is,
yeah,
he'll change their life.
Yeah.
He'll rescue them from hell and give them a place in heaven.
Right.
He'll give them, man, he'll make them better versions of themselves, like he has for you and me.
Right.
That's available to everybody. And hey, man, we can train them to be his disciples that make not just a difference, but an eternal difference.
An eternal difference. Yeah.
Because man, if everything that we do, man, we're gonna help your life be better.
Right.
Right here and right now. But if it doesn't lead to heaven,
right,
then we're not doing what God has actually called us to do.
Yeah.
So I like to put it this way. Man, we've got the church has to grow because more people need to know God and be saved mm-hmm. and to have a place in heaven. But man, at the same time, man, this is why we take life groups so seriously, is the church also, when it grows, has to be smaller so you can get in a relationship right. with people. You're not going to be alone, that you could find a people group where you can take the mask off and say, mm-hmm. this is what I'm dealing with and going through, and they'll pray for you and help you.
Yeah.
But man, you know that your life is changing.
Right.
And that's what it's all about.
Yeah, that's so good.
So, and we see that happening. We want to see it more.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for sharing those today. I hope that this encourages you guys to know that I want you to think about your own confessions. Yeah. What things do you struggle with? You know, we recently did a series called Storytellers, and it's all about how we all have a story to share and you're not alone.
Right.
And so I think the more that leadership can be vulnerable in these struggles, our goal is then that you guys can be vulnerable in your own thing, because what we uncover, God promises that he will cover and he will take care of us. So how do you want to wrap this up? You have a phrase?
Yeah, I would just say, hey, if this is helpful to you, man, share it.
Right.
Share it with a friend. Share it with a leader. Maybe I think one of the most powerful things in leadership and really in life is when you can have an honest conversation with someone.
Yeah.
And on the other side, you hear the words, man, me too.
Yep.
Like,
exactly.
Man, I'm insecure or, you know, whatever. And, and it's freeing.
Right.
And so I hope this is helpful. She'll share it.
Yeah.
Man, comment. Man, I would love to hear your thoughts, questions, comments. We're in this together. After all, this is called Life Lean In. We think nobody's perfect.
Right.
We're all in process. We're figuring it out together. So never stop learning, never stop growing, and keep leaning in.
Have a great day.